Recording has started. You may now begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the 45th GNSOE PDP team meeting taking place on the 11th of February 2019 at 1400 UTC. In the interest of time, there'll be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the telephone bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Hearing no one, we have listed apologies from Aiden Federline, NCSG, Christina Rosette, RYSG, Ashley Heineman, GAC, Benedict Addis, SSAC, James Bladel, RRSG, and Amr Elstar, NCSG. They have formally assigned Beth Bacon, Colin Curry, Lorraine Kappen, Greg Aaron, and Sarah Wild as their alternate for this call and any remaining days of absence. During this period, the members will have read-only rights and no access to conference calls. Their alternates will have posting rights and access to conference calls until the members' return date. As a reminder, the alternate assignment form must be formalized by the way of the Google assignment link. The link is available in the agenda pod to the right, as well as the meeting invite email. Statements of interest must be kept up to date. If anyone has any updates to share, please raise your hand or speak up now. Seeing or hearing no one, if you need assistance updating your statements of interest, please email the GNSO Secretariat. All documentation and information can be found in the ePDP Wiki space. There is an audio cast and view-only Adobe Connect for non-members to follow the call, so please remember to state your name before speaking. Recordings will be circulated on the mailing list and posted on the public Wiki space shortly after the end of the call. With this, thank you, and I'll turn it over to Kurt Pritz. Please begin.
Thanks very much, Terry, and hi, everyone. Thanks for coming to this extraordinary meeting of the ePDP team. Not that they're not all extraordinary. Really, really briefly, we'll get to the substance as quickly as we can so we can get through the meeting as quickly as we can. You have a version of the final report that was sent to you a few days ago. After the results of today's meeting, if touch-up is required to that report or, you know, we're empowered to make edits in it because of agreements made by this group, we'll do that and forward it to you. That'll be the version of the report for your reference during this quiet period, or maybe so-called quiet period, and you'll have that. Sorry for these sniffles. And that's also a version of report that will be sent to the GNSO Council later today for instructive purposes so that the council can be briefed on the form and structure of the report and the content of it to date. We're sending it to the council today because the document motion deadline is today at midnight UTC. But like I said, we'll make updates based on today's meeting, and then we also have some late updates to the data elements workbook as that small team's been working on that up to the very last few hours. So we found that really instructive. Also, later today, after the results of this meeting, I'll send out bundle 3 of the consensus call. So you'll recall that the first two bundles included the areas where we had agreement in the room on the recommendations and the purposes. I've taken on board the recommendations of some of you that consent is conditional about consent about other recommendations or that certain things occur. So some minor modifications or annotations will be made in the final report to make sure that we accommodate those, and you'll have time to review those. So with that, unless there's any points of order or questions about the agenda, we'll get into that right now. So I'll pause for 30 seconds and see if anybody has anything to say. Oh, Jesus, sorry. Carlos, go ahead. Caboose, did you want to say something?
Excuse me. I said good morning, good afternoon, good evening. In many of these issues, I made constructive suggestions in a compromise and conversion approach. I don't see any of those appeared here. It means that they are totally ignored, and I am disappointed. The one is before here now, 28. I made a suggestion, and it's not there. I don't know why. Why some of the suggestions made by the people, the chair explained in 1.5 page the rationale, try to convince them when I made any proposal, even if it is not considered. And I would like to know the reasons. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Caboose. You know, I know places where your recommendations have been adopted, so they are taken into account. And I'll say that the purpose of this call is to review these recommendations and then consider input. So your input into these discussions is welcome, especially on this recommendation 28, where we've asked the contracted parties to make the recommendations for us. So let's have at that. If there's no more comments, I don't know if we have this language in a bigger format. As I recall, in the last meeting, there were two issues. One was the selection of a date for defining or describing the length of the transition period. So I think we should be pleased to note that it's 2 months longer. Well, that's bigger. So we should be gratified to note that it's two months longer. So it provides more opportunity for getting closure to those issues. And then a second short paragraph is added, as we briefly discussed last time, that the GNSO could start this implementation work right now. We don't necessarily have to wait for the board to approve this thing on May 24th or whenever they get to it, but rather we could start this now, which would provide some more time for doing that. And I particularly like the date, February 29th, so I applaud that. I think what I'll do is we'll take 2 minutes to read this, and then I'll come back to you in just a minute. Time. Caboose, is that a new hand? Do you want to make a comment on this?
Yes, new hand. I make a comment in big paragraph. My comment is that we have done a lot of things to have some sort of arrangement. This time is arrangement, it's not agreement. It's arrangement how to do after this 1 year, starting from 28th of February here for 1 year. And then after that, last but one line says that we'll not be subject. Why? Why they should not be subject in a lump sum to compliance penalty? There should be some qualifications under certain circumstances. May not be, but not will not be. Why? If they continue and ignore everything that we have done after 1 year, they will not be subject to penalty. There should be a reason why it is that. So I suggest that we replace will by may not be, comma, under certain circumstances, not subject to the penalty. I don't want to be totally open. This is with respect to the first paragraph that we have. With respect to the second paragraph, in second line, why we say informally convene? We just say convene. It is up to the GNSO and ICANN to see whether they need to have a meeting or arrangement informally or formally. We should not need to tell them in the recommendation informally convene. So I suggest the deletion of informally in the second line of the second sentence, and I suggest in the last but not line of the big paragraph to replace will not but may not be, comma, under specific circumstances, comma, subject to penalty. Not to leave it totally open that registry and registrar to do whatever they want. If after 1 year they continue to go ahead with existing technical temporary specification, which we have resolved and which we have commented a lot. So I don't think that we give this green hand to them without any qualification. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. So I'd invite like a member of the contracted parties who wrote this to translate or describe the actual effect of this last sentence to Caboose, because you're likely to do it better than I. I don't know, Alan, if you're going to answer Caboose's question, or if not, then we'll get it answered and have a discussion of his suggestions. Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you. I was going to try to give another person's impression of it, and then the contract parties can tell us both what it really means.
Okay.
I took the first issue of will and may to say they must follow if they are not following the new policy yet, then they must be following the temporary spec. And as long as they are following the temporary spec, there will be no sanctions imposed. So that's the way I interpreted that. In terms of the convened and formally convened, I read that to say the group would be convened ahead of time to start doing some work, because it specifies that they're going to do work before the board approves it. According to the formal rules, it can only be formally convened after the board takes action. So I read that as it will be informally convened to do some work, but it will not have formal existence until after the board, because that's what the rules say. Thank you.
That's right. I think that, especially on that second point, that's the easiest path to it's somewhat an odd construct, but it's the easiest path to start work rather than getting permissions to change the rules or something like that. So it's a way for us to circumvent's a really bad word, but it's a way for us to get started to work early without changing the rule book. So thanks for that. Matt, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. And what Alan said is exactly correct. Let me just try to articulate again what that last sentence means. So essentially, contracted parties until February 29th of 2020 can operate either under the requirements of the temporary spec, even after it expires, or may choose to implement all of the recommendations and policies that eventually will hopefully be approved by the GNSO and then the board, and then put into place. So what we're saying is, as long as contracted parties are operating under either one of those regimes, they will not be subject to compliance penalties. After February 29th, then all contracted parties must abide by the recommendations in the policy. So hopefully that clears it up for Caboose. And I see Beth has her hand up, so she may articulate it even better than I. Thanks.
A follow-up question. Kurt, I have a follow-up comment.
I think, let's go ahead, Caboose.
Yes, I'm there. I want to say that we should distinguish between all these works that we have done during the 46 meetings and several hundreds of emails, and not saying that these should be put to the basket by registry and registrar if after 29 of February 2020 they opt not to follow what we have done, but they follow what is in the temporary certification. I would wish to give some secondary priorities for the temporary certification if they decide to do so. If you introduce that preference to what we have done by amending the last but one line instead of will, may, I would be happy and not proceed with the under certain circumstances. We made that instead of will not, may not be. Still, we want to encourage them to follow what we are doing. We are spending considerable amount of time and effort, and I don't know why we want to ignore that. Why registry and registrars, why they want to ignore that? And for the second line, I don't agree that we should say we recommend that they do informally. We recommend that they convene. It is up to them. If it is ahead of schedule, they could take it ahead of schedule and tell, they could label them informally. We don't want to tell them formally or informally. So I wish to push for the deletion of informally in the second paragraph, and I wish to replace will by may not be, still encouraging them to follow what we are doing or what we will do during the last 46 or maybe up to 50 meetings and so on and so forth. We did a lot of effort, a lot of investment. I don't want to give this free hand to registry and registrar after 29th of February 2020. They said, okay, I don't like what you have done. I do. What is the time respect? And many people, they object to the time respect. Otherwise, why we had this 46 meeting? If everything was like that, so we should accept it in July 2018. So we should have a difference, a distinction. Please introduce some way in order to distinguish between these two steps. Thank you.
Thanks, Kavus. So I think you're misreading it slightly, and I think that Alan and Matt both explained that, up until February 29th, 2020, that the registrars would have, the contracted parties would have the option of following the temporary specification or the policy, but certainly under no circumstances is the work we're doing getting thrown out in any sense. In fact, we're saying it has to be implemented by the 29th of February. Beth, maybe you can do a better job than me.
The text does not say that. I'm sorry.
All right. Well, Kavus, it's now Beth's turn to talk.
Thanks, Kurt. Thanks, Kavus, and Matt and Alan for explaining as well. I think that this is meant not all to be a preference or to show preference to one or to delay implementation or anything. It's, in fact, meant to smooth the way and make sure that contracted parties are able to have the time to implement this properly. I mean, once you do the final report, it's not actually a consensus policy until it goes through the implementation review. So, frankly, the contracts aren't triggered until then. So what this does is it actually has the contracted party is continuing to be GDPR compliant in a way that the community has kind of agreed and embraced via the tenants of the expired temporary specification, while the implementation gets off the ground and you do the actual work of making it a consensus policy, which is something you can pick up, read, and say, okay, I know what to do. I can make this work within my business model and my system. So in no way is it a preference or a stop or a stopgap or delay. It's actually maintaining compliance with something that's already agreed until we can get to the next thing, which will be the consensus policy that comes out of the report. So I think that it actually is helpful, and it really provides a lot of consistency for those who are not contracted parties, but those who are engaging with contracted parties on data and things that they, and who is and things that they need. So again, I really don't. I would have to disagree that it's a preference. I think it's really consistent and actually it provides a lot of stability and predictability, which is what the community needs. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Beth. Mark.
Mark Schlosser. Two questions and a comment. First comment is, as Alex says below, I think it would be good to mention wherever it says temporary spec to mention that the temporary spec is expired. So you could say the expired temporary spec. I know that sometimes people have questions about, how can you be consistent with this thing that has expired? It might be good to be explicit about that. Secondly, sorry if this was explained already, I don't know what it means to informally convene the IRT. What does it mean to informally convene the IRT? If someone could explain that to me. And then lastly, again, sorry if this was mentioned already, the dates when the org field will be redacted and then unredacted, how do they fit into the implementation bridge? Are those dates tied to this in any way, or are they free-floating and yet to be defined relative to this? Thanks.
Thanks. I can answer at least one of those questions. The IRT is being convened informally because the rules for convening an IRT say after the board approves the policy, the implementation recommendation team will be convened, and that's three or so months from now, and that's 3 months we could use for implementation work. So what we're asking the GNSO Council to do is informally convene it right now so we can get started, and that way we don't have to change a rule and such. My sense is this is unrelated to the org field, but the and so that's free-floating, but the implementation work, in the implementation work, the element of the org field has to be taken up. That's my understanding of that. Diane, to anyone else who can answer those questions with more specificity, please do. Diane, welcome.
Hi, thank you, Kurt. I have 3 points. I think that number one, rather than being shall be with the date, it should be shall be no later than, as others have weighed in, to make a more definitive timeline that is clear. Secondly, much to what Alex and Mark have tried to explain, we can, in a policy recommendation, refer to an expired policy. So I think that it has to be very clear that we have to work within it's an expired, but it has to be within the confines of compliant with, according to the guidelines of. So those could be two possibilities. And then much to Cahoos's and Giorgio's point, we certainly, I don't believe, should be saying that we'll not be subject to compliance penalties, because we really do not have the authority to say that. So I think we have to cushion that or condition it upon it shall be compliant with. And if not compliant with, then the necessary steps will be taken accordingly. So I think that there's a few different changes here that we should make from a legal and policy standpoint.
Go ahead, Cavus.
Yes, my question is that why registries and registrars are not or considering that they may not be able to implement or to be compliant with the policy that it is, will be adopted, and they want to continue the temporary certification. What is the rationale? What is the anxiety? What is the danger that they will see that the new arrangement may not fit them? And from the very beginning, from now, they say that it's sort of encouragement that don't worry, if you don't comply, you can continue this temporary certification and you would not be. But I want that you at least give this sort of priority, that the objective is to comply with the new policy, but should under certain circumstances they are not able to take that and continue the temporary certification, they will not be. So we need to inject something, not to give the impression that from the very beginning we encourage them that you don't need to comply with the new policy, because after 1 year you could continue to do the existing temporary certifications that you have done for the last 1 year, and you will not be subject. This is the essence of my proposal, to say that second paragraph, should under certain circumstances, registry and registrar continue to use the temporary certification after 1 year, then so on and so forth. So we give this certain circumstances that they should explain why they could not be or will not be in a position to comply with the new policy. That is my point. Thank you.
So the answer to your question, Caboose, is that the policy is vague and needs to be fleshed out in detail so that it could be incorporated into contractual requirements. And so with a vague policy, that is difficult to follow. That's why we need an implementation period, and that's why we're providing the option of continuing to follow the temporary specification for a few additional months, which won widespread support amongst this group. So that is the answer to that. Is there any response to Diane's recommendation that we should change the wording to the shall be no later than? I think we discussed this last time, but I don't remember the particular reason for retaining the specific date. Beth or Matt, do you have a reaction to that right off the bat? Thanks, Alan.
Thanks,
Alan, you snuck in first ahead of Matt. You can go.
Okay, sorry, I didn't hear my name. I think it's implied because of the until 29th, February 29th in the last sentence, but it certainly doesn't hurt to add it there also, at least from my reading.
Yeah, I think it's already in there too, but Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. I was just going to say this language was the result of a lot of work between the registrars and the registries and sign off from our stakeholder group. So I think it's safe to say any changes and additions we'd have to take back to the group because we got this language through a lot of interaction. So any changes to it, I think we'll probably need to take to the list. So Diane, if you want to put some proposed changes to it and we want to consider those, it'll take us some time to do that. I don't think any of the CPH folks on the call can sign off on that without going back. Thanks.
Okay, so I think we're going to leave this one behind. I just want to say that, just to reiterate what Matt said, but from to a certain extent, Beth, from a independent, more independent point of view, that I do understand that this language was significantly debated at the contracted party level, where and represents quite a significant compromise on the part of many parties that came together for this discussion. I don't want to go too much further in describing that, but the changes that are recommended, I think, would not have a great effect at the end of the day in how we run this. So my advice for the group is to try to find a way to live with the current language. But if you do not, then I'm kind of looking at you, Diane. But that's just because you chose to speak up, and I admire that. So if we can think we're going to live with this language, I think it's a preferable way to get to the end and not open up a negotiation that was finally closed, because that negotiation, when open, can go either way. Cavus?
Yes, I once again repeat that. We need to add at the beginning of the sentencing and should, under certain circumstances, registries and registrars and so on and so forth, we give them these specific circumstances that they could not be in a position to comply with the new development and so on and so forth. This is point one. Point two, when I ask a question, I'm asking of the chair, but not the secretariat. I request secretariat not to respond to me. Our counterpart is the chair and the team, but not secretariat. Thank you.
Thanks, Cavus. And often the secretariat and support staff and I, they're support staff. They're not secretariat. So they're called support staff because they're well steeped in these issues. And also, you know, we're chatting about responses. So it's all a collaborative effort here, and we're all one team. Georgios, please go ahead.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thanks.
Yeah. I just want to highlight that it doesn't change too much of the of what will happen in practice, but I think the point of Cavus is the following: as the language is written there, it looks like if there is an option to follow the one or the other, the temporary specs or the new policy. Whereas the way I think Cavus is trying to, the point he is trying to make is that the precedence should be for the policy. So everybody should follow the policy unless, for justified reasons, they cannot do so. So I think the problem comes earlier in the language where we use the or either. So there we should be more, I think, strict and try to say that the contracted parties should follow the new policy, and only for justified reasons. If they cannot, then the policy for those issues that they cannot do so, justified reasons, then they should apply the temporary specs. That's what I think, but Cavus can correct me if I'm wrong for what he's trying to say.
I think this will not
change many things, but I think the burden of somebody to justify why I cannot do it, and it's not because it's easier for me, falls back to the contracted parties. Thanks.
Thanks, Georgios. You know, I think that's not an unreasonable request, and I'm thinking through that, and generally, policies are, it's not incumbent upon contracted parties to follow a policy at all until it's gone through this implementation recommendation team. So the standard practice would really be to not follow our new policy until the implementation work is done. So that's the standard practice. And so we're following all our rules, carefully crafted rules. We would have a void between the expiration of the temporary policy and the completion of the implementation work. So the standard practice preferences would to be to not follow the policy. And so I think that, you know, extending the temporary specification is one way to avoid that. And then, so what the contracted parties have done is say, you know what, we're going to and this is partial answer to Cavus's question, we're going to follow something. It's either going to be the temporary specification or the new policy. And so I think, you know, that's good. They're going to follow something that's written. And to get to the very last part of your recommendation, you know, Unless it's reasonably justified, I forgot the exact wording, you put it much better than I did, that sets into motion a whole requirement for a procedure with guidelines on what's reasonable and how do you prove it's reasonable to follow the temporary specification rather than the new policy. And so I think that would create a greater burden on contracted parties. And so if we ask them to take that back, it would, you know, likely create an extended negotiation. So I think your recommendation is, you know, and I'd invite others to comment also. Maybe I'm not the one to be doing this, but well, it doesn't change the. I agree with you that it doesn't change the gravamen of the recommendation here. It would require the need for the creation of a new process for determining when it's reasonable to depart from the policy. So I talk too much, but for all those reasons. And maybe Beth can put it more succinctly than me, that I think it's kind of difficult. Beth, go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. I don't want to drag this out anymore. We've covered it pretty thoroughly. And I do appreciate your explanation. It was spot on. The we have this is exactly to cover the concerns that Cavus and Rubios have explained. You know, a final report does not a consensus policy make. And the concern is that the temporary specification ceases to exist contractually on the 25th of May. So what we would like to make sure is that we have some contractual certainty and predictability. And by extension, those engaged contracted parties will not see something fall off a cliff. The practices won't change immediately because the consensus policy hasn't been made, the final report hasn't been made into a consensus policy through the implementation process. And it's a defined process. And I think that the goal here is that we all really want this to be the practice. We want to have a consensus policy to follow as a uniform practice and not have to keep doing this and have temporary things that are falling off and redoing. We understand that phase two is going to get started. So the goal here is to actually move more quickly through the defined processes for the benefit of contracted parties and the community so that there is consistency. In no way is it a preference. So I think the reason, Georgios, you asked very clearly why and what circumstances would we not be able to comply with the consensus policy, it's because it's not a consensus policy yet. When it is, a contract is triggered and a contracted party can comply with it. And that's the long and short of it. Thanks.
Thanks, Beth. And I'm just thinking here for a second. Let's do this. I think I know where Cavus is going, but I'd like to gauge support in the room for this as written. So could you put a little green spot up there if, you like this as written, or if you think that change is required, then you can either you can put up a red spot or something like that. So that'd be good. So if you would, agree if you are willing to accept this as written, or disagree if you think a change is required, that'd be helpful. Come on, you guys. Give me a vote. So I'm not seeing any red spots, but I'm seeing that some people are on the fence. So here's what you need to think about. Sorry for the ums. Yeah, think about whether you can live with the way it's written. If not, please send an email to the list with a suggested change, and we'll try to gauge the support of that, and we'll take it under advisement during the quiet period if we have to reopen this negotiation. And if you could, in your input, if your input could be from your group and not just the individuals, that would be terrific too. Caboose, if you could just wrap this up quickly, we want to get on to the next thing.
Yes. Yeah, quickly, is that the third line from the bottom of the big sentence before registry, you ask, should under certain circumstances, and continue. Thank you. Should under certain circumstances and continue the sentence as it is. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. Sorry, I was on mute. Let's go on to the next agenda item, which is reasonable access. And I believe the issue remaining here, although thanks, everyone, for your really constructive comments in the chat, especially Alan, Hadia, and Diane. And that's all I'm seeing, so there might be constructive comments above that, but I have a small window there. So with reasonable access, we had a pretty good discussion online with regard to how LEA fits law enforcement fits into this. I specifically leaned on Thomas to consider the input and provide some wording. I saw also a reasoned input from Alan Woods. Maybe I'll ask Thomas to he developed some additional wording, so maybe he can tell us how he's addressed this, which is right at the bottom of the reasonable access memo here.
I'm happy to do so. Kurt, I saw that Mark has raised his hand. Do you want to go to Mark first, or shall I do a quick introduction?
No, actually, I'm waiting for you, Thomas. I just wanted to be first in the queue after you.
Okay, thanks so much. Hi, everyone. This is Thomas from the record. The idea of the language that you find in the Adobe window in bold was to add a little bit of color to the one sentence that I had previously offered. So the idea is that we would clarify that we didn't yet have an opportunity to work on policy for law enforcement disclosure requests, and that it may well be that these criteria are appropriate, but maybe they are not, and that depending on the jurisdiction of the requesting law enforcement authority, the alleged crimes involved, and the location of the contracted party as a condition for the contracted party to be entitled or to be required to disclose data. So what I've tried to do here is a couple of things. Number one, explain why this set of recommendations is not applicable necessarily to law enforcement requests. It also makes clear that we're not trying to exclude law enforcement requests, but just to clarify that they might have different criteria, and thirdly, that the criteria might be dependent on the jurisdiction of the registrar, the law enforcement authority, and the crimes involved, because there might be different criteria for disclosure, particularly at the international level, if very criminal activity is taking place, opposed to not that severe crime where data disclosure might be more problematic. And what I also wanted to do, and this is my last remark, is to build a bridge based on the comment that Ashley has made, that we will take a look at this in phase two. So basically, we're explaining where we are in the process. I hope that this language doesn't look like we're disinviting law enforcement, but we're just saying we're not yet there. More work needs to be done, and different criteria might be applicable. So I think I should leave it there. I'm still here to answer questions or add more information if you would like me to. Thank you.
Thanks, Thomas. Thanks for that cogent explanation. I'm going to rise to my own point of order and say there were two issues with regard to reasonable access. One is this one, so let's have the discussion one and get past it. And then the second issue really had to do with where the words request for disclosure might appear in this, that we had a discussion about that last time. So there was a discussion of that on the email list too, and we'll come to that right after this. Mark, go ahead. You're first in the queue.
Okay. A question and a suggestion. The first question is for Alan Woods. So Alan posted a pretty lengthy email the other day. Alan, my reading of your long email was that it was compatible with this in the brackets. So I see you're next in the queue. If you could just confirm that I've read your feedback correctly, is it compatible with the brackets or not? Secondly, it does seem to me that we need the language in the brackets is pretty clear. I'm just not sure it will be sufficient. I haven't come up with any alternate language yet. I'm still noodling on that, but there may need to be something else in Purpose 2 itself. So I'll come back to that momentarily. Thanks.
Thank you, Mark. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. And yes, apologies. I know it was a long email. It was unfortunately something very important to get across. And I just want to say, so to answer Mark directly, yes, absolutely. What Thomas has come up with, I personally have no issue with it. Again, it is acknowledging the fact that, look, this is not necessarily aimed at law enforcement, and we need to be clear about that for the reasons that I outlined in that email going through 1C, D, and E. I just wanted to say that, you know, and to make it very clear, is that the contracted parties, well, I can speak for myself anyway, but I am not standing in the way of law enforcement getting access to the data where possible, or where possible and where necessary and where legal to do so. It's just that we need to focus not on just creating an easy way of doing this. We also need to focus on what is currently legal and making sure due process is being followed as well. And that's not the EPDP's main focus area. That would be up to the LEAs. And what we're trying to say is that the LEAs absolutely should not be necessarily putting all their eggs into the recommendation 12, now 18 basket, because it is, you know, and for the reasons we went through in the email, you know, this is, it's a different type of request. And, you know, we're talking about legal obligations and powers and warrants and subpoenas and things like that, which are much more available and applicable to the LEA in making such requests, that they don't have to have the same sort of comfort that this recommendation currently has. So I just wanted to make it clear that we are not saying that we are putting up barriers for the LEA, but we just need to make sure that, you know, that the LEA are looking at this from the appropriate point of view, and that they might not necessarily need to go through the recommendation 22. So recommendation 22, sorry, the recommendation 18 or 12, whatever it is. So I completely agree with what Thomas has put into his compromise wording. I don't know, Kurt, if you mind me just going quickly into into Ashley's point. I can hold off on that one, but it's very straightforward. And if I can hold off until we come around to that if you want.
Oh, I'm not going to. Let's hold off on a second. I'm going to put you first in the queue on that one. Emily, welcome to the call.
Thank you very much, Kurt. It's Emily for the record. I think that Thomas's proposed text goes a long way to resolving some of the issues that we heard raised by law enforcement colleagues last call. Actually, I was surprised, I must admit, that the previous text was read in that way, and I hadn't read it in the way that other colleagues had, but I think that really just highlights the need for clarification. It was certainly, as I had read it, not the intent at all to in any way put law enforcement in a worse position than people who are wanting the same information for the purpose of civil law claims. In fact, quite the opposite. So to my mind, Thomas's text goes a long way in, I hope, clarifying that. The objective was to set out some rules of the road. So just to offer support on that, I also have just a very brief comment on the requests versus policy issue, but I will hold fire for now. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Emily. And after I read Alan Wood's email on that and the level of detail in it, I agree more with Thomas that we have to, you know, it made me agree more with Thomas' intervention here that we're not going to be able to flesh out all that detail here. And, you know, certainly I'm of a mind that law enforcement's not at a disadvantaged position. They're law enforcement, so they have tools at their disposal. Laureen, please go ahead. Welcome to the call.
Thank you, Kurt. And let me also say that I appreciate Alan and Emily's comments about being mindful of law enforcement concerns. And I also appreciate Thomas's revised language, which I think definitely goes further than the original language in its clarity. That said, we have some competing beeps. That said, recommendation 12, or as it's now renamed, I'm going to still call it recommendation 12 and let everyone know that I'm talking about what's on the screen, reasonable access. This doesn't mention law enforcement at all. We know that there are challenging issues dealing with what grounds law enforcement will be able to use under the GDPR, and these have already been flagged for phase two. We also know that for all of the this draft report, as a sort of parenthetical to all of it, we are always being mindful that we are not demanding any contracted party or anyone else for that matter act in a way that's unlawful or inconsistent with the GDPR. So I raise the issue why we are then putting this remark here when one, law enforcement is not being called out specifically, when two, we already know we have to grapple with these issues in phase two, and when three, we are not putting parentheticals that say, by the way, make sure you're behaving in a lawful manner compliant with the GDPR as part of the whole report. So that's why I have concerns with inserting this language, which I think makes something that's already a bit complicated even more complicated and can be misinterpreted in a way to signal that somehow law enforcement requests are going to be either excluded or things are going to be made more difficult. Thank you.
I wonder if one way to address your concern in Thomas's writing is where it says that you know, there may be, it should be might, I guess, there might be different criteria or processes that need to be followed. You know, change that to can be followed. So it makes it like there's more opportunity rather than more restrictive, something like that. Because I think what Thomas is saying is there's for LEA, there's a lot of ways to skin that cat, you know, depending on the different jurisdictions and that sort of thing. Margie, please go ahead.
Thank you. This is Margie. I think where I'm confused in regards to the proposed language is when we talk about different criteria or processes, are we talking about within the WHOIS policy or outside of the WHOIS policy? Because I think that's probably where I don't understand yet what Alan's email was suggesting. I mean, obviously there's the subpoena process and that, you know, is something that, you know, LEA has to struggle with and you know, obviously comply with. There's nothing, you know, we're not changing that. But what we're really talking about is enabling WHOIS to, you know, to address the areas where a subpoena isn't needed. And so that's what I'm trying to understand is this group willing to look at a policy that relates to WHOIS access? Now, again, you know, it doesn't mean that the request will be honored. And certainly there's, you know, that you know, that issue isn't going to be addressed here, but to have a framework where I, you know, where they're part of the whole WHOIS process. And if that's the case, then I think we have to focus on not just the parenthetical, but as Mark mentioned earlier, you know, ensuring that there's a proper purpose for that. And I feel that our purposes identified in our recommendations don't clearly provide a path for LEA.
Sorry, I had to take myself off mute. Thanks for that, Margie. It's a good distinction. Alan Woods, please go ahead. Unless you're, are you still on this topic or are you lining yourself up for the next one?
I was lining myself up for the other one. Yeah, I mean, I could add more word soup to the already soupy soup, so I'm not going to on this one, but I still stand by what I said in the email.
So I think, is there anyone else that wants to talk about this issue of adding this parenthetical? Well, it's parenthetical right now, but any more comments about that and the need for it, the need to have an additional discussion? Caboose, are you in on this issue? What's your take?
Yes, on this issue. When I received email from Ashley and talking, the difficulties that she encountered and plus two other GAC members. Then I contacted Thomas and asked him to reconsider, and he kindly responded positively to that. So I see a big steps from Thomas in that regard. But I suggest that if now Lauren is speaking on behalf of Ashley, he could suggest some improvement if she believes that improvement. It is always easy to criticize, but it's not easy to propose a solution. Is any particular suggestion from Ashley or from Lauren on this regard? So I tend to agree with the biggest steps taken by Thomas, and I appreciate that very much. But still, we need to work. We are more or less closer to each other, and I think that is an important issue we should resolve it quickly, either at this meeting or by email. So I stand to ask Lauren and Ashley or those others if they have a concrete suggestion to the latest text by Thomas. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Caboose. Go ahead, Lauren.
Thank you. And while I typically wholeheartedly agree with the notion that it's easy to identify problems and harder to come up with solutions. In this case, actually, I believe that The text proposed by Thomas is created this issue where there wasn't an issue before with this particular text. So the solution, and I put I put an excerpt of Ashley's comment in the chat just to remind people. It was this text that created an issue with a recommendation that the GAC had already been on board with. And I'm afraid that the whole thrust of our comment, Caboose, is that we believe these issues should be dealt with in phase two. So I don't have a proposal for language here, because I think the insertion of language itself creates a lack of clarity and creates the risk of misinterpretation that is unnecessary. We are already going to be dealing with this in phase two, and it is already implied that all of our recommendations are intended to be compliant with the GDPR.
Thanks, Lorraine. Georgios, it's the GAC hour.
Yes, it's one GAC after the other. But as I was not also in this last week in the calls, and I apologize for that, but just seeing the effort here that was put to address the issue, the problem that I see, and I have to agree with Lorraine with that, is that still the text can be, because it has many conditions. It says it may well be, and further down is it may be. Again, there are several conditions in the text as it is now that could lead to different interpretations. So although I also see that the intent is to the right direction, I don't see the value of adding this at this stage, and I prefer also to be deleted and have a more better discussion when at phase two, where we can see clearly what are the needs and how they're going to be addressed, the needs of the law enforcement. So again, for me, I think the GAC at this stage, we may not have something to counter propose, but we can see not the necessity to restrain ourselves with this text, because I think there are some dangers in this misinterpretations. I prefer that this will be deleted. Thanks.
Okay, Alan Woods.
Sorry, I'm still waiting on the other one.
All right, so I don't exactly know where to go with this. I think we're going to have to leave this part of the discussion behind and understand. I haven't looked at the text at the. So I like what Ben has here. How do we? I think we're all in agreement that this is a topic that's going to be discussed in phase two, just so that I agree with Lorraine that says we don't have to say we're going to be GDPR compliant in every case, because we are going to be GDPR compliant in every case that's implied. And so I agree with that. I agree that we don't want to put in language here that could be interpreted that law enforcement actually has a tougher road to hoe than any other party seeking data. I wouldn't want to put language in here for that because I come from the mindset that law enforcement does not have a higher bar. I never interpreted it this way, but I could see that it might be. And And finally, to get to what Ben said, if we've agreed we're going to flesh out this discussion in phase two a bit to make sure we're on good footing, we need to capture that in some way. That was Thomas in his introduction to this stated he took on board Ashley's comment and thought he had made that specific in this writing. So those are my three takeaways. And I think what we want to do is go forward with that thought. Emily, please go ahead.
Just a quick one, because we seem to be in a sort of a state of the language is put in by Thomas in order to try and allay concerns that were raised by law enforcement colleagues on the last call. We're hearing from Laureen and other colleagues that actually that language has the potential to create confusion. I think, as Cavus has also suggested on this in the chat, why don't we just delete it? And then everybody who's requesting is subject to the same sort of criteria. Apologies, Cavus. I had asked for the floor because I had mistakenly thought that you and Alan were queuing for the next round of comments. Apologies for that.
So Emily, please finish. So then, what's your
So my proposal is that we just delete that the new wording in the bold square bracketed wording at the end, and just leave it at that. It seems that the addition of that language suggests that law enforcement would be treated differently, and actually, to some view, not have the same rights as third parties who are just asking for the data for other purposes. So if the deletion resolves it, then, it was put there to try to allay the concerns of law enforcement colleagues. Law enforcement colleagues are telling us it does the opposite of the intention, so let's just get rid of it, would be my proposal.
Gavus, go ahead. Cavus?
Hello? I was saying that please preferably delete the sentence as proposed by Thomas. But if he still wants to say something, create a footnote and just flag the issue and mention that this is a matter to be carefully or to be studied and decided upon in phase two. Just a note if he wishes or insists. But my preference is going along with my GAC colleagues and deleting this sentence that at least three GAC members, they oppose to its inclusion. But having a note and flagging the issue and asking that this is a matter required further discussions and decision at phase two is not harmful. This is a second suggestion. The first suggestion is deleted without note. Second suggestion, deleted with a note along the line what I said, just raising the flag and saying that this should be discussed and decided upon at phase two. Thanks.
Thanks. Margie, are you in this one or are you on the next one?
Yes, I'm in this one. This is Margie. I actually think we might consider going to Rec 2, where we talk about what's going to be talked about in the reasonable access discussions in phase two and insert, law enforcement requests there. I think there's other things mentioned there, including cybersecurity and IP. And then that way it's clear that it's going to be explored further in phase two.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit concerned with disturbing recommendation two at this point, and also kind of think it's in there. I think the sense of the room is that we can go ahead and delete this language, and I don't know if Thomas wants to opine on this, but I think where we are is we'll go ahead, Thomas. Thanks.
Yeah, maybe just very briefly. The reason for me making the suggestion of adding some transparency here is that I think that under certain circumstances, law enforcement requests might not be able to be honored. And I just want to be upfront and transparent about the expectations that the law enforcement community might have. You know, so it may all work nicely, but it may also be that some law enforcement at the global level will be disappointed because legally it's not possible to honor their request based on what we have in this recommendation. So I just wanted to flag this, but if this group doesn't see the need for flagging it, that's all fine. Let's just move on. I just wanted to be of service to our community to avoid conflicts at a later stage. And thanks to Caboose for offering to add an additional note, but I don't need to get my words into this recommendation. It's all good. Thank you.
Thanks for being so gracious, Thomas. That was great. There's one more issue with regard to this recommendation. We've gone back and forth on language a little bit. The title for this recommendation is reasonable access, but of course the title never makes it into our final report, and it's the words and the recommendation itself that does. And this is where last time we talked about reasonable access would mean reasonable lawful disclosure and maybe not reasonable request for lawful disclosure. And so we're going back and forth on that a little bit, and I'd like to get I'll let Alan take the floor on that, and hopefully we can understand this the nuance in the wording.
Thank you. I won't speak on the other one. I think we've done enough now. On this one, I understand exactly why Ashley put in the simplification of the wording. However, and I even indicated on the last call, it immediately didn't strike me as being an issue. However, once I went back and read it again, it seems to place the emphasis on the disclosure and not the request. And we need to be so very clear. And it's not about one or another. It's just about for the reader, the casual reader who's reading this, and, of course, for our friends in the compliance department who will be interpreting this later on, we need to be very, very certain that we're pointing to the process around the request, not a process around the disclosure. And I don't agree that it is so clear to people that it is about the process if you remove reference to the request. It's not about splitting hairs at all. It's about having clarity for enforceability, for review, things like that, which I think the removal of the word request would have. So let's be, I appreciate what Ashley is saying. I just don't think that it's necessary to change at this point because it removes the clarity that we had.
Any response to Alan? So your recommendation, Alan, is essentially to put it back to reasonable request for lawful disclosure. So essentially, we're not calling it reasonable access. We're calling it lawful disclosure. And the reasonable request part is defined by the criteria below that describes the criteria by which requests are made, and then goes on to describe the process for responding to those requests, first the acknowledgement and then the reply period. I guess I should look at the chat, huh? Can anyone speak in, is controversial the right word? If we put it back, no, we're not saying we're changing the title to number 18 because the title doesn't really appear in the report. We're going to have a period of silence while Alan's off the call. So are we okay with putting that back? I'll take it up. Here's my recommendation since nobody's raised their hand is I think we're willing to go back to the previous wording. I'll take it on myself to have a discussion or at least touch base with Ashley on this, since she's the recommender, and if necessary, start some sort of email discussion on that. I'm gonna wait for 30 more seconds and then say, so what we're gonna do is revert the wording back. I'll refer to Alan Wood's email and an email to Ashley and have an email discussion on it if necessary. And also for recommendation 18, we'll delete that language that Thomas labored at and Ashley actually had a hand in creating, maybe inadvertently. So,
could you repeat what the action is?
Go ahead, Caboose.
Yes, I am interrupted by internet. Could you repeat what is the action? You deleted from this recommendation, and after discussion with Ashley, you put it in another recommendation? Thank you.
No. So we're going to put the recommendation back the way it was. So it's going to say reasonable request for a lawful disclosure, which was the original wording. Well, the original wording agreed to as of last week.
That's good.
Then we'll let Ashley affirmatively know, since she recommended this change, to remove requests for the term request for. We will, rather than let her, read carefully and find out we went back, I will contact her and let her know we're making this change, and we'll have an email discussion on it if required. Hadia? And I think I tried to answer your question. I was answering your question in the chat, so I don't know if I did or not.
Yes, so actually we do have a request for local disclosure, and this is when we say minimum information required for request for local disclosure. But the minimum information is for the request for local disclosure. But actually the recommendation is about lawful disclosure. It's not about the request. So I think actually was correct when she made those suggestions because the recommendation is not about the request. It's about the reasonable local disclosure. That doesn't mean that we are going to have disclosure, but this is the subject we're talking about. So. And again, we are mentioning the requests and what the request should look like, but I don't know, and I don't know if I'm the only one that thinks this way, but.
Thanks, Hadia. So let me just confess that. To me, and this is where I kind of fall short too, is that I think the results of both languages would be the same because in the wording below, we describe what a reasonable
you know, what the criteria for a request is. And then we describe the process for how it will be handled by contracted parties, timing for acknowledging that, you know, receipt of the request and a time frame for responding to it. So to me, the important detail is below, and to me, it's well written. But so I'm going to, well, I guess Mark's not going to add Alan. So go ahead, Mark, and then, you know, Alan can educate us both because I think a little better explanation would, Hadia, would help both you and me out. So go ahead.
Hi, Mark Schlosser. Oh, wait, is Alan first?
Go ahead, Mark. You were first.
I put my hand down because I thought I'd already been called on, sorry. Okay, so, I actually like this new language because...
Which one's the new language?
No, I'm sorry, the title. I like the new... Sorry. I like how it says reasonable, lawful disclosure as opposed to reasonable, lawful request. Because if you read the actual text, it talks about how you request and also how you disclose. But disclosure is really the purpose of all this. Disclosure is contingent on there having been a request. But if you call it requests, then you wouldn't want to have all the rest of the language about the disclosures because that's only about the requesting part. So I think that it is better and more clear to talk about disclosures, which are, of course, contingent on a lawful request, than to talk about requesting, because if you follow that to its logical conclusion, then you can take out all the parts about the disclosure. So I thought that this new language was improved and pretty good. Thanks.
Thanks, Mark, and thanks for your comment in the chat, Milton. Go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. So hopefully my line is a bit better now. Yeah, I mean, I think this we're currently at the whims of wordsmithing and splitting hairs and semantics at the moment. We have come to a good agreement because the focus was on the process surrounding the request, not the process surrounding the disclosure itself. And I mean, where this comes and becomes an issue for us, and when I say us, I mean the contracted party, is because, and this is not in any way giving out about our friends and I can compliance, it is they are given a specific review and a mandate of what the ultimate policy will be on this, and they will interpret it in a way that is probably closest to what is written. And therefore, we need to be very careful, and because and you can trust us through this, through many years of policy development, that words such as this matter. And all I'm saying here, and I don't think it's a huge stretch, and I don't understand why there's a pushback, and it's not a huge stretch to give us that comfort. We all agree that it's about the request. Everybody who has said this, it's about the request process. So why not just leave in the word request as it was already there in the recommendation? Let's not tend to wordsmith and split hairs, and let's give that little bit of comfort, perhaps, to the contracted parties, so that when eventually we are the ones that have landed this on our desk, we go, yes. It is about the request and not about the disclosure itself. And let's just close the door. I don't see why this is a huge issue, to be honest. I think we have more important to be talking about. So let's move on.
And Kurt, does
Caboose is in the queue. Yeah, so I'm just thinking, Caboose, go ahead.
Yes, I think there is a big difference between request for data and disclosure of data. There are two steps. You may request that the data to be disclosed, that it may not be disclosed at all. So I tend to agree that we should be consistent. Are we just talking of the request? Whether or not there should be any disclosure, or we are talking of the major and important and the fundamental issue of disclosure of data. I never had in the temporary certification of GDPR request is always data disclosure. So I think we should be quite consistent. We should be quite careful. I know that some people, they don't want to discuss about disclosure because there is no model, there is no access, and so on and so forth. They want to replace or something else. That is why I objected in the Toronto with respect to initial warning. I wanted to add something else. But I tend now to agree the speakers, I don't remember who he was because I was in the corridor, not listening to the computer, that he said that we should bring the word disclosure rather than request, because you may request but never taking any action. There are two consecutive steps, and we should not mix them up. Thank you.
So that's a good point, Caboose. So it makes me wonder what to do with that. So the proposal for the change here is to have both in here, right? Reasonable request for lawful disclosure, with the idea that requests will always be handled according to a certain way, and then disclosure might or might not be made depending on the analysis of that request. So
the issue whether you want to retain the request, that is the issue, or just talking about data disclosure. The issue is this one.
Right.
I understand. The sentence, as you mentioned, is right. You request for disclosure lawfully, and it may be replied or may be responded or may not according to the circumstances and justification. But my question is that you want to, emphasis on the request or emphasis on the disclosure. Thank you.
Thanks. Alan, do you have a reply?
Absolutely. I mean, in fairness, I think Caboose has just proven my point there. The original intention was a process about the request for disclosure and giving the comfort to those people who wish to make those requests. And if there is that confusion already within the group itself because of the removal of the word request, I think that, as the mathematicians would say, is QED.
Go ahead, Adia.
So I have a quick question to Alan. So Alan, do you think that whether we change the language or not, the result is the same? Because actually, depending on your answer, you know, I'm fine with not changing the language.
Just to quickly, I do think it changes the meaning of it. Yes, the explanation does go into specifically about requests, but we then have it causes confusion, and I really think that's what we need to avoid. Therefore, it should remain with the request for disclosure just to avoid that confusion, which has been demonstrated, unfortunately.
So, Alan, if I could try to repeat your concern, is that the language reasonable lawful disclosure, from that it could be implied that if a requester provides the minimum information required, that in every case disclosure is required, and by putting in reasonable requests for lawful disclosure, that implies that first the requester has to provide this minimum information, and then it will be analyzed to see if the disclosure is made. So that your concern is that the current wording with request for redacted implies that contracted parties will be required to disclose information even if they determine that it's not a lawful request. Is that correct?
Yes. I mean, ultimately, that is the confusion and the issue that we'd have. It is easily avoided by just ensuring that it is signposted at the opportunities that it is about the request, and it is a reasonable request made and a reasonable request review, not about the answer of that particular request.
Go ahead, Lorraine.
Thanks. I just wanted to clarify part of Ashley's intent here, which is the difference between focusing on all of the obligations of the requester and a provision which also seeks to ensure not only that the requests are properly made, but that the contracted parties respond appropriately. Now, I realize from hearing the discussion the thin line that the contracted parties may be concerned about, which would be an undue misinterpretation that they are forced to respond to requests in all circumstances, which of course shouldn't be the case. But I think Ashley's concern here is that this provision is not just putting the obligations on the requester, that it also contemplates the contracted parties responding appropriately to requests which meet the criteria. So I'm saying this to try and clarify Ashley's concerns.
Thanks, and that's let's make sure I'm not on mute. Thanks, and that's how I remember Ashley's intervention too. You know, again, gosh, I hate that we're stuck on this. Again, you know, there's detail below that describes everybody's obligation under this. So I don't see that as a risk. And again, I wonder, we're kind of tied up in that we have recommendation 18, reasonable access. So that, you know, that reasonable access does not appear in the report. The recommendation itself appears in the report. And so maybe we just need to blow up this second paragraph and, talk about this. But it's a bifurcated process, right? There's the process of receiving requests that will be deemed complete if it has this minimum information, and then it will be processed, in accordance with the steps that will be here to see if it's lawful or not. And if it's lawful, then the disclosure will be made. So I'm concerned that we're trying to pack that into these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10 words that we have here, and we're having this grand debate about it. I think that my personal opinion is it's better to put the deleted language back to, because I see Alan's point as being the greater risk here. And I see Ashley's point is, and Lorene's reiteration of it, as being valid but less of a risk because the process is laid out below. So I'm sort of leaning that way, but it's not my call. So, I don't know if we want to try to reword this thing. I think the work that's been done on this has been great. It's one of the best achievements we had, that we've come to agreement on this stuff, and now we're wrapped around the axle a little bit on the on this on trying to convert this. Caboose, is that a hand?
Yes, it's a hand. I think, what is your as a chair of this group, your understanding? The term lawful is associated with disclosure, or the term lawful is associated with request, or the term lawful is associated with both. That changes the structure of the sentence. So could you kindly reply to which one of these you associate the lawfulness? Thank you.
Well, I think... I'm the least qualified person in the room to answer that. I think lawful has to do with disclosure. I think that's why some people are saying reasonable requests for a lawful disclosure, and that's why that was written that way originally. Margie, please go.
Sure. Thank you, Kurt. This is Margie. I think what Laureen and Ashley were talking about is we haven't closed the policy with a commitment that there will be reasonable disclosure in the event that the requests are properly submitted and it's lawful to do so. So there's actually no basically final step in this process. And I think that's the thing that's missing.
Milton?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess you can hear me good. Okay. So I can't believe how much time we spent on this. We all know that requests trigger the process, and we were talking about how to handle those requests. Now, it seems to me that what Margie was asked for in her last statement was actually for us to define and develop fully a disclosure process, which, of course, we all know is going to occur in phase two. So, look, what exactly are we accomplishing here by having this debate? I just don't get it. It's like if you remove the word requests and reasonable, you know, it's sort of like, what are you telling the world? You're telling the world that you just disclose without a request? Are you telling them it doesn't have to be reasonable? You know, are you just trying to provoke debates that undermine compromises and agreements? I just don't get this. I think we need to put whatever we talk about this in this recommendation, it has to be reasonable requests for lawful disclosure. And that's that. You know, that's the only thing that's going to get agreement. And I think we all know that. So why are we wasting time raising this issue?
Thanks, Milton. I'm going to try to channel Margie a little bit and say that, with respect to her comment, I think we agree that this will remain in place as well as a more standardized access model discussion because some people won't use that model. So this will endure on. But to Margie also, I think the detail of this will be part of the process will be fleshed out in phase two also. So I sure think the disclosure part is in here. And, you know, hearing Milton's comment, I'm more on the side that this is a two-step process, right? There's reasonable requests and there's lawful disclosure. So, That seems to make more sense to me. And I think that, you know, it was carefully thought through when originally written. And I think Ashley put some additional careful thought into it. So I think we've talked it to death. So we'll take this, you know, I think what we're going to do is recommend I'm going to ask the staff to put back the language the way it was. We'll continue to discuss this one over the quiet period, and I and maybe some others can come up with cogent arguments for both sides of this. So I think it's, but I do think it's a. You know, I don't think reasonable is a modifier for lawful access. I think lawful access is lawful access, and that's it. And lawful disclosure, oh, my God. So lawful disclosure is lawful disclosure, and that's it. It's not reasonable lawful disclosure. And so I think the reasonable part modified the request. So I think that is more appropriate. So I'm going to go back to where I was. We'll reinstate that language as is, but I want to, you know, even with Laureen's thoughtful intervention there, I want to re-engage Ashley on the issue and see if we can have that. We want to have a New Orleans-style funeral until the final report is issued. So I think we're done with this one, Caboose, but go ahead. You're the only thing standing between us and a break.
Yes. Are you saying that we say reasonable, lawful disclosure? If that is the case, it could be impertinent, rightly as you said. Reasonability goes to request, and lawfulness goes to disclosure. So that may serve a good purpose. Reasonable, lawful disclosure. Thank you.
Thank you, Caboose. No pastries. All right, we're going to take a 10-minute break. I'll see you at 10 minutes to the hour, and we'll take up S2 agenda items. Thanks for your perseverance, everyone, and I'll see you in a bit.
Hi, everyone. We'll start in just a couple of seconds. I'm trying to stifle a sneeze, so it'll just be like 15 more seconds. Okay, thanks everyone. Sorry for the slightly later start. In recommendation 15, formerly known as recommendation 11, and I agree with Milton that maybe we can distract everybody with changing the numbers rather than the substance. As I recall, the language to this recommendation was agreed by this team, and so with the following exceptions. So there's a few changes of voice and language in the first part of paragraph number one to make it more certain. And then in the last sentence of paragraph three, it was, I think, and we might call on Mark here to start, but it was thought that this was vague, and he made a request for registrars that might be most interested in revising it. We didn't see that suggested language, so the support team and I took and Rafiq took a stab at amending this language at the end here to make this more clear. So maybe Mark could react to that and see if this helps or not. Caboose, please go ahead.
Yes, I have no problem with the added text or what is in bold, but the form is not appropriate. We recommend the GNSO. We do not recommend the community. There is no link between this group and community. The only link is backward from community to this group as a common, as a comment, public comment. I suggest that either in the text we add at the beginning GNSO or ICANN could or may invite and continue, or put the text in bold as a footnote. But we do not directly recommend the community. Thank you.
Thanks, Kibbles. I don't know if the support team can do a better job of explaining this to me. You know, I think our recommendations are to the GNSO, and then they would approve that, you know, the community members be invited to contribute. So maybe they have a good response to that, intervention. And so we're going to talk about this. So I'll put together a better response for you in a second. Mark, please go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. Mark Anderson for the transcript. You know, jumping in since you asked for it. You know, I think this one's trending in the right direction, I guess. You know, we keep tweaking with it, and I think the tweaks are an improvement. For the first one, you know, I think the tweaks are better. What I think is, You know, what I think for me, my main concern was that the this recommendation is basically was, you know, I what I read it as is this recommendation was to provide more data to inform phase two, and so I think the new language gets there. I think that one's better. The second one here, and this one, I don't feel like it's overly appropriate for me to be speaking on this one because it's really about, my concerns are largely around, registrars' contracts, not mine. But I think it's, I have some concerns about, how on the implementation side, how you would interpret this language in implementation, and sort of what existing contract language is replaced and what existing contract language is maintained, and that was as you pointed out, that was sort of why I asked put registrars on the spot a little bit there. On the third one, I think I think the clarification, the new language improves on my, I think you addressed my concern basically is, I think it was a little bit, it seemed to be calling for a new waiver procedure when there seemed to be an existing one. And then having a review of the existing one, which seemed very confusing to me. I think the new language seems to address that and just, seems to recognize that there is an existing waiver process and that it should be looked at to see if it can be improved, sort of my paraphrasing there. So I guess that's a very long way of saying I think this is an improvement and the language is trending in the right direction, but still would love to hear from registrars on item number two. Otherwise, thank you.
Thanks for that, Mark. And I remember that this particular language replaced other language that registrars had, and they reviewed it at some length. I don't know if it was Emily or Matt that talked to that, but I'd enjoy hearing from them again. And then Alan, I think you now that I see your hand, you were the one that talked about soliciting input from community members as part of this. So maybe it's great that you have your hand up and you're going to talk about that portion of it. But of course,
no, I'm going to talk about another part of it. Getting very confused. I thought we had decided that there was a general retention period of 1 year, but since you could file a TDRP on the last day of the year for the TDRP in particular, and maybe for other policies, but certainly for the TDRP, we needed to retain data for longer than a year. Now, maybe my understanding was completely wrong, but that's not what this says anymore. This says for number two that for the TDRP you can only retain the data for 1 year after the life of the registration. So not an additional year, but just for the 1 year. So am I remembering this wrong, or did the wording get mangled, or am I misreading it?
So Emily's next in the queue, which is fortuitous. So there's sort of a technical issue in that the data might have to be retained for longer than a year to account for the play out of the TDRP.
I thought that's why we had that whole paragraph number two, but that doesn't seem to be saying this here.
All right. Emily, I don't know what you're going to say, but maybe you can respond to Alan's comment too.
Sure, Kurt. This is Emily. I think that in essence, paragraph 2 is fine, and I've just been consulting with registrar colleagues, and we're all pretty fine with the language. But Alan raises a really good point here. I believe that Thomas proposed on email to extend it to 18 months, 1.5 years, something like that, to sort of over that, you know, that hiatus that Alan's talking about, so that, that would be a possible through, and I think that that would resolve the issue that Alan Greenberg has raised, I hope. But, you know, in essence, paragraph 2 is fine, and we just also support Mark's comments about the rest of this. We're pretty comfortable with the wording as it is. Okay, I hope that's helpful. Thanks.
Very helpful. Thanks, Emily. Alan? Alan Woods.
Sure, thank you. Just a quick clarification on point 3, because as I'm reading it again here, seeing the new additions, the which may be longer or shorter than what is specified in the ICANN policy, that's fine. But when we move on to the PDP team recommend that ICANN work review its current data retention waiver procedure, I think we need to be very clear that the waiver procedure will only apply where the period should be less than that which is considered and required by ICANN policy. For anything in excess, the registrar would be considered, or the contracted party, should I say, would be considered controlling their own rights for that retention period beyond that. So I would suggest a clarification and a tightening up there that the waiver policy is only for that which is less than ICANN's stated period and not for that which is more.
I think I understand what you're saying. I don't know how the language as it is would affect that. I mean, the recommendation here is for ICANN to review its data retention waiver period to improve efficiency, you know, and ensure GDPR compliance. So, and has to do with, you know, jurisdictional issues and the like, and says nothing about the time frame. And I think, to me, what you're kind of suggesting is that the review of the data retention waiver procedure might also address a different extended time frame or something like that. Is that your concern, Alan?
Yeah, like it is just purely, I think, a matter of drafting. I think because it runs on specifically from one thought, which is maybe longer or shorter, and then goes directly into the concept of the data retention waiver procedure, we just need to be clear that those are two separate things, that the contracted party may have a longer or a shorter period, which is specified by ICANN policy, but that the waiver procedure only should apply to those periods that are expected to be shorter than that which ICANN requires. I mean, as it's written, it's fine. I mean, maybe it's just a simple new paragraph, maybe. Because
okay. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
we could just make that paragraph 4.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, now I understand your concern. I know, and I think that would fix it. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. Yeah, I think what Alan is saying is if you're in a jurisdiction that requires 5-year retention, you don't need a waiver from ICANN to extend the retention period. Back on number 2, Emily said that she thinks it's fine the way it is, but the way I'm reading that, it says I don't even know why that paragraph is there for the TDRP if you can only keep it for 1 year. So that whole paragraph is somewhat moot. If it doesn't extend the period, and so I think it's necessary that we alter it as Thomas has suggested or something. I don't know if 6 months is the right amount, but the only reason that paragraph is there is because some policies may require retention longer than a year, and you have to keep the appropriate elements to be able to accommodate those policies. So I think there is a change that's necessary there, and I thought it was originally worded to say that, but somehow along the way that seems to have been lost. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. So to get into the nuance of it a little bit, and Emily can correct me if I'm wrong, I think when she was saying the wording was fine, she was referring to the last bolded sentence in paragraph number 2.
Oh, yes.
That she found merit in your comment about the period having to be either a year and a half or accommodated in some other way. And so I think we have two options here. We could make it a year and a half, or we could say, put in the words around the TDRP that requires 1 year retention plus any additional time required to, adjudicate filed TDRP, something like that. So we could do it in one of those two ways, yeah. I think.
I can live with either.
Alan Wood? Okay, thanks, Alan. Alan Woods, are you still, is that a new hand? Did you like sneak in front of everybody? No. Cavus.
No, sorry, that was a bad one.
Yeah. Cavus, go ahead.
Yes, I think I suggest that we do not change the second part of this recommendation. We don't put 1.5 years. We don't refer to anything. It has been worked out with a lot of back and forth. What I suggest that the issue raised by Alan Greenberg be included in the footnote referred to the TDRP. Above the TDRP, put an asterisk or put a superscript 1, and below that you add a footnote in case that a longer period is required. This retention may be prolonged for that time, but not exceeding another 1 year. But add as a footnote, because it is not permanent. It is some occasional. It is some circumstances. So, in summary, don't change the sentence. Add a footnote, and in the footnote, address the point raised by Alan. In fact, he put it in a correct way when he verbally explained the situation. But I leave it to him to provide a note indicating that in case of that necessity, the period will be longer, but not 1 year beyond the initial 1 year. Thank you.
That's an approach. Thanks, Cavus. Thomas, please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Kurt. I have three points to make on this. Firstly, in the first bullet point, it reads different retention purposes. I think it needs to read different retention periods.
Yes, it does.
Retention purposes. So that I think needs a correction.
Yes.
And then on the second point, I have mentioned this in the chat already, but my suggestion would be to clarify that that there is 1 year retention period based on the TDRP, and then months for the contracted parties and to implement the deletion. That is common practice. So if you have to keep data for bookkeeping purposes, for example, for 10 years, it's, at least in my jurisdiction, it's permissible to make it 11 or even 12 years because you need some time to delete data. So I think if you split it that way, that would most likely hold water if tested. But you can certainly also make the split differently and say it's 14 months in case requests are filed in the last minute plus another 3 or 4 months for deletion, right? But I think if we end up with 18 months, that should be fine. I guess there is a legal difficulty with the last sentence in number 2, which reads that data can be retained for other purposes for shorter periods. And we can't just say for shorter periods. The way things stand now are we have 1 year according to the TDRP, and then the data may only be used for TDRP purposes, period. The data needs to be blocked from access by staff after the expiry of the registration. It can only be recovered for TDRP purposes. If we want different purposes to be eligible purposes to use the data, we need to explicitly state what those purposes are and what the retention periods, which may be 1 year or shorter. So we need to do a little bit more drafting. If we also see the need for having the data retention for other purposes than TDRP. That's something that hasn't surfaced in the discussion so far. I would suggest that we continue to work on that in phase two, because we're in the last minute before we publish our final report. But I think that most certainly, you know, a catch-all phrase, you know, for shorter periods, for whatever purposes, will not work. Thank you.
Kurt may be on mute.
Thanks, Alan. So I want to, I meant to make a note about the suggested change in paragraph one from different retention purposes should be different retention periods. So unless someone has a question about that, then we'll go ahead and make that change. I'm kind of with Alan about what does it mean to have an additional 6 months to implement deletion. I'm getting from what Thomas said, that's sort of a GDPR or legal term of art. And I wonder if we can sort of conflate this in our writing, the 6 months to implement deletion with the 6 months being, you know, enough time to close off any filed transferred disputes that are filed. So I wonder if in our wording we can say, 1 year plus 6 months for the registrar to implement deletion with the understanding that that's what that means. I don't know if we could build in wording about that. With regard to your last intervention about the use of data, I'm not sure I understand or agree that would be the only data for which that the only purpose for which that data could be used. And so, you know, I'd welcome a longer discussion about this in phase two if you think that's necessary. But I think this is language that registrars agreed to after consideration of that very issue. And so I think what I'd recommend there is, and I hate to use a footnotes or side notes, but I think what I'd recommend there then is maybe a footnote to this last sentence in paragraph two, saying that, you know, the specifics of this need and other uses of data that are retained for certain purposes needs to be fleshed out and detailed in phase two. So those are my three comments to that. Alan Greenberg, please go ahead.
Thank you. I get the impression I'm living in a fictional world where we're rewriting history. We decided back in Los Angeles that although we didn't have a firm understanding of exactly what the retention period needed to be, we all decided that 1 year seemed reasonable. And we had a general one-year retention period. I believe Thomas is right. We probably want a completely separate paragraph saying post whatever the retention period is, you have 6 months or a year in which to delete the data. So it doesn't have to be deleted on exactly the right date. That makes complete sense. TDRP only came into the discussion when Trang mentioned that we had forgotten about it, and because the TDRP can be filed within for a year, we needed to retain the data longer than a year. The one-year period was not for TDRP. It was a general retention period, and now we're talking about for TDRP, we may need it extra. That's the whole reason paragraph two was put in, because the TDRP was special. Remember the first wording said, but you must only use the data for TDRP, under penalty of death.
that's not there anymore, and that's fine. It shouldn't be there. But this whole retention period was not for TDRP. It was a general retention period for whatever might come up. A registrant can renew a domain a week after expiration. You know, the domain is technically not there anymore, but, you know, there are all sorts of reasons why we needed the one-year retention period. The TDRP is extension. So why we're now talking about retention for a year being there for TDRP, I have no clue. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Mark, please go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. It's Mark Anderson. I think we were winding down. I don't want to belabor this discussion any more than needed. I think we're establishing, you know, what we're trying to do here is establish, you know, the minimum, you know, required retention period. I think extending it beyond 12 months is probably not necessary from a practical standpoint. It's clear that contracted parties, or at least I think it's clear from the language, that contracted parties can extend it, you know, longer as needed. You know, if they need more time to just go through the process of deleting it, you know, I think, you know, we heard that that's justifiable. And I also think, you know, if somebody files a transfer dispute on, you know, the last day of the policy, you know, just from a practical standpoint, you know, obviously the, you know, that involves the losing registrar of a domain registration. And, you know, the losing registrar wanting to keep their customer is, of course, going to keep the data, you know, necessary for them to pursue this case. We're trying to maybe legislate things that, you know, don't need to be legislated. That said, you know, I think, you know, Tomas has suggested that, you know, 18 months is just, you know, from a practical standpoint is, you know, would be, you know, agreeable and acceptable under GDPR. And I think we've heard from registrars that they're good with 18 months. So if we want to make it 18 months and, you know, close this and move on, I think that's fine. And we should maybe do that.
That was an excellent intervention. Caboose, please go ahead.
Yes, there is three issues here. One is data retention in general. It was now discussed, and after many, many discussions, 1 year is almost agreed. There is TDRP, there's another issue that Alan Greenberg raised that could be covered in a footnote. There is a third issue is the post-deletion actions activities that you raised, Kurt, that may be put in another footnote saying that this is a matter to be discussed at phase two. If you want to treat that now, here, you can introduce this. Ask Alan to provide a note for the TDRP, and then you add yourself another note that with respect to the post-deletion actions or period, that is an issue to be discussed at phase two. If you don't want to do that now, you have to give it to someone to collect information for the interested body, and the next meeting present you something that covers the point of everybody rather than starting the discussion and reopening the game for an hour. This is my firm suggestion. Thank you.
Very much, Caboose. So I'm kind of, you know, to Alan Greenberg, I'm kind of, I know we started with a year as something reasonable, but I think we got to TDRP as our pretty sound basis for selecting 1 year. So I think that came into play a little sooner, a little more concretely. And, you know, and so thanks. I think everybody and this has been really constructive. And so I'm for adding, so I think we should retain our anchor of TDRP in here because we've identified it as the tall pole in the existing policies for retaining data. And then I think we should add another 6 months, as so many have recommended here, to accommodate that and to, you know, exactly the words that Thomas used about for deletion. So use exactly those words. So the two changes we'll make, is that'll be one of them, that in the interim, the EPDP team has recognized the TDRP as having the longest justified retention period of 1 year. And that will retain the data elements required. And I don't know exactly how to say this, for a period of 1 year following the life of the domain name, plus 6 months to 6 months in order to affect the deletion, whatever wording Thomas said. And I think that will be defensible for GDPR standpoint. And then second, we'll capture Thomas's request to continue the discussion about the purposes to which the data can be put in phase two. I hope that's acceptable. Cavus, go ahead.
I think your suggestion is sound, and we could agree with that, and asking Thomas to discuss it further to see what else comes out, but he needs to kindly come back to us to see or to present the result of its discussion. His discussion. Thank you.
So I think Thomas, I want to use the exact wording you said there. So, Alan Wood, thanks, Cavus. Alan Woods?
Hi, sorry. Apologies for that, Gord. I'm sorry, I was listening and I really needed to just clarify because I just don't understand why this is not as clear as it should be by at this point in the process. The reason why we have number two in is because we have identified that 1 year for the transfer dispute resolution policy is acceptable because the transfer dispute resolution policy can be brought in for a year afterwards. And I have no problem for Thomas's wording, that is what is contemplated by what is reasonable to the controller, and I think that's absolutely fine. So you've got a basis, and then you have what is reasonable in order to achieve that, and that's 18 months post the registration is fine. However, can we just be very clear that everything that we have here, so if we're saying we're retaining it for the TDRP, the only use for that data that is stated at this moment is for the transfer dispute resolution policy, for the purposes of the transfer dispute resolution policy and nothing else. I know you mentioned this about phase two, that they'll be deciding what other ones there are there, and that's what one's about. But can we just be clear that if it is not specifically defined, then it is not a retention period for anything other than that which we have stated. And I just think you need to be so clear on this because I think some people haven't quite gotten that yet, that it has to be linked to a specific thing, and that specific thing, such as the TDRP, is the only use to which that data can be put. So we need to enumerate what those uses are. And if we're doing that in phase two, we're doing that in phase two. But we need to be clear on that. I just felt like we have to clarify and get that on the record.
But there's so what happens on day one after the expiration of the domain name where there are other purposes, that there's other reasons for retaining the data? On day one, day two, day 17, how do we address that?
Well, I would just simply ask the question, what are those purposes? We haven't defined them, and therefore we can't
right.
retain
so that's
them
what
we haven't defined.
Yeah, right. So that's what I think is that's what we have to do.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. But it's just that the understanding from certain members there was that, it's this generic 1 year and then also the TDRP for 1 year. Absolutely 100% wrong. That is not what data protection requires. That's not what the European Data Protection Board has been super clear to us for the last few letters. It is currently we say there was 1 year, and that is related to the TDRP, and it is up to us to come up with the other reasons specifically why we would be retaining data beyond the life of the domain as well. We just need to be very clear on that.
Right. Okay. Cavus, I'm taking that as an old hand.
Yes, it is OTAN. I'm sorry.
All right, so I'm going to try to get revised language for this out. We'll do that today. We'll do that the first thing after this call, but I think we're very clear on it. Just want to, I see Thomas is typing, so don't want to close it off and go to the last agenda item before we hear this. Thanks, Thomas. So, I don't know if I want to continue this. I don't. Alan Woods, I don't see the clash between what you said and what's written in number two, other than to say we have to do the work that's necessary to flesh out what those other reasons for retaining data are and attach the correct life to that. So, Caboose, I see your hand up. Is that an old hand or a new hand? Alan, go ahead.
Apologies, Kurt. No, just to confirm, I was not suggesting any change to that at the moment. I was just making sure that we were all on the same page because so we knew what we were agreeing to. I'm not suggesting any change. I just thought it was an elephant in the room that needed to be pointed out, I'm afraid.
All right. Thanks very much. All right, good. So thanks for that. The next topic to close us out is the data elements workbooks, which work continues to happen on that, and it's admirable work. Barry, are you going to introduce that, or are you going to turn it over to somebody else for introduction?
Yeah, I believe I'm on the hook for that. Sorry.
Oh, good. I thought I saw your name up here. Continue on.
Thank you, and sorry for the extreme hearing my voice all the time. So, number one, and first and foremost, I just need to call out Barry for the exceptional work and the commitment he has had to this. And, like, we'd be lost without him on this. So, thank you, Barry. What is very important for us to understand is that, you know, as we're getting into, or as we're now gone through all of the appendix, the annex, should I say, the data elements workbooks, we can now see why there was such a need to do this and to clarify it and to basically consider the decisions that the team has come to, specifically with regards to how the data is being treated from beginning to end in this particular process. So the first realization, and we mentioned this very briefly before, the first realization that is vital when it comes to the workbooks was one to understand that when we're looking at the data elements and all the processes that are required for each of the data elements, it is per purpose. So we're looking at purpose one, collection through to deletion. Purpose two, collection through to deletion. And when you consider each of the purposes in their own kind of ecosystem of data collection, or tech collection, I've already gone against it, data processing, you become aware of difficulties and layers, as I keep referring to it, as an onion. And, you know, as part and parcel of this, you know, that's what happens with things like the registries looking at purpose 1B. And every time that we try to track from collection from the registrar to collection by the registry and a transfer occurs from that registrar, it started getting very, very heavy. So with the work of the team, what we've tried to do is make it as user-friendly as possible, as visual as possible, and trying to simplify the processes as much as possible plausibility being true to the way in which the data is processed in any particular situation. So if you can see in the data element workbooks, which Barry did, there you go, you shared the link there, thankfully. And you can see there's five versions of this. So, you know, fair play to, again, Barry for doing such good work on this. Probably more than five versions, I've been saying a lot of versions. That in these workbooks, you can see that we brought it down to very, very, we clarified it and simply, I'm just trying to bring up the thing on my own screen, sorry, there it is, to simpler headings. We've also put the definitions of the headings in, and I would hope that people would go and review these headings and make sure that there isn't any major heartache about the definitions that we came up with. But also you'll see that there's changes such as the OCPs and the O or H. So that's optional of the contracted party, optional of the contracted party, and optional of the registered name holder. So these are reflecting the conversations that we've had, but also it's reflecting the difficulty of the situation because it's not always clear as to how to, in such a setup, how do we get across where the data is not, it is necessary for us to have it. And we can put it into a purpose, and the purpose is still there, but it's still at the end of the day at the option of one of the parties, and it's very difficult to put that in. So I think that we've actually come up with a way which illustrates that, and if somebody was to be an outside view, just the layman would look at these workbooks, they'd be able to go, okay, I kind of see where they're coming from here. And that is literally the level at which we have to put it, because it is so complex to try and get this into a digestible format. So we've gone through all the purposes. We tried to trace the elements. And I suppose one of the biggest things that we need to point out, and I touched on this, and I apologize, I'll try not to soapbox on this, but it becomes very apparent when you are breaking down the processing activity per purpose where there are difficulties in the reasoning that we went through in order to come up with some of those purposes. So I'll give a good neutral example. And a neutral example, that would be purpose six, I suppose. Purpose six being the URS and the dispute resolution processes, where we're trying to figure out, and the question is, where do we collect the data for the URS? And quite organically within members of the team, the response was, well, we don't really collect it for that reason. So we would collect it for one of the other purposes, and then we would apply it to that particular reason, which, of course, doesn't work when you're talking about data protection, because when you are calling out a primary purpose, you must specifically call out all the processing activities from that. And a collection is part and parcel of that. So if you do not collect data for that purpose, you do not have a primary purpose. What we're talking about is more than likely, you know, the application of the terms and conditions of a registry operator. It's a secondary purpose of that because it relates to the primary purpose and it is acceptable and it makes sense. So that was one of the incongruities. So, for purpose six, it's fine. We can create a purpose, but we must be mindful that for people such as the contracted parties, if me as a registry, if I am claiming that to be a purpose for which I am collecting that data, I need to make sure that my privacy policy calls that out specifically as a purpose. But we also must make sure that as the registrar, the person or the entity that has the contract with the registrant, that they are providing not only notice of it for their purposes, but the notice of the registry's purpose as a primary purpose within the terms and conditions. So these are all things, considerations. If you make something a primary purpose, it must be through the entire process. And I mean, I will just briefly go into it because, you know, this is where I always come from. But when you apply that to something like purpose two, and I know it's a placeholder, and I'm accepting that and I'm moving on from it, but where it falls down is that people ask, well, where do you collect the data for purpose two? And the only answer that us as a small team could come up with was, well, from purposes one through seven, not including two. And that just doesn't stack up because we do not collect the data for that reason. The disclosure of the data is for all the other purposes, and it just gets into this legal quagmire. But again, it's a placeholder, and we will sort that out in two. So there was a lot of work, and there's still, I mean, again, Barry, he's the same. I came in late, I must say, yesterday. I had a few things that came up during the week, so I need to kind of, like, take a slight step out of it. And by the time I came back in, they had done ridiculous amounts of work on this. And Barry has been so gracious in taking into account all our thoughts. And I think there's perhaps one or two more things that we need to look at. But at this point, people really need to go in and be comfortable with what is written within the data processing elements. It should be straightforward. You should understand where we're coming from on these things. What I will say to Barry is kind of an update, and I know you made the changes because of what I said, but in Purpose 6 specifically, Mark, as my registry colleague, pointed out to me that the transfer for the URF is not required to all registries, so that would be optional based on the CP, which was originally there, so I apologize for that. But I'll send you an email about that. So basically, on this one, I'm just going to say, you know, if there's any questions when people go through it, I think we really need to start teasing this out and make sure that the entire team is happy with what's going on here. Again, these are support workbooks. Therefore, there are certain things where we just need to accept and move on because they are showing the work and the consideration that we've put into each of these purposes. But at the same time, we need to be comfortable and aware of what's in it. An awful lot of work has gone into it. So please, please, if you have questions, I think we need to raise them, and we need to raise them as soon as is possible. We've had a small time to get this done, and hopefully it's reflective of an actual situation as opposed to the way it was before, which was quite difficult to read. So hopefully I haven't bored people to death on that one, and I hope I've given a good rundown. But happy to answer questions or defer to other members of the small team who might be able to provide more data on that.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for that explanation. Thanks very much, Alan. And your interventions were a little bit late, but it's good that they were done. So, Mark, please go ahead.
Thanks, Kurt. Mark Anderson. Yeah, I agree. Alan did a great job with that. I just want to, Barry put something in chat. I think is a great clarification. In the example of URS, as one of the, one of the changes we made, the worksheets now, the new version sort of reflects the fact that, a URS provider can go to the registry or the registrar to get access to the data. If it exists at a registry, it can go there. If it doesn't exist at a registry, it can go to the registrar to get that data. And also, sort of recognizes the fact that URS is not a requirement for all TLDs. So that's a great example of the kinds of tweaks we were making. And just kind of, sort of drilling down into the nuts and bolts of these worksheets and making sure they accurately reflect things. One thing I think, to add to what Alan said is we did some work on definitions, and that's included in there. I think it's worth reading over. And then also, one of the things that we've discussed as a group multiple times is how, just the word optional by itself isn't sufficient, and so we have different flavors of the word optional. Optional for the registrant, optional for the registrar, optional for the contracted party. And so I think one of the real improvements we've made to the workbooks is sort of clarifying what we mean by optional. That's another one. I encourage you to look through that. So I think that I think that clarification and going through and defining what we mean by optional is an area where we've made a lot of improvements and will make it a much cleaner when it comes to implementation time. Just sort of a couple things to add to what Alan said.
Thanks for that, Mark. And third person of the troika that worked very hard on this, did too, is Alex Deacon, and he's gratefully got his hand up. So go ahead, Alex.
Thanks, Kurt. Yeah, this is Alex. Yeah, so I agree. I think these are in much better shape, and I also want to thank Barry for the incredible amount of work he put into to the at least five or six different versions that we've had between now and the time we started. I do think it's important for all of us to review them because at least from my point of view, it helped clarify a lot of things. And in particular, perhaps because I'm a visual type of thinker, the diagrams were really helpful. And now that Barry has gone through and made them prettier and more accurate, I think I would suggest that everyone just take a second look at those. And then finally, I just wanted to say I agree with Alan Woods that the perfect, in this case, the perfect is the enemy of the good. I think there's, over time there will be improvements and updates, but I think what we have now is a vast improvement of where we were when we started this little small team. And I suggest that we do try to move forward. Put what we have in the final report at some point, and then move on. Thank you.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Alex. And since we're recounting sort of the history of this, I think it's important too to note that it all started with Thomas's matrix of all the data elements and mapping them all out and where they had to flow, and the work he did with Farznay to this. And then I think at some stage you were staring at that big spreadsheet and decided that the workbooks were kind of taking bite-sized chunks out of that matrix and making it more readable. So it was quite an evolution for the life of this whole project that we started with, Thomas and Stephanie's exhortations that we need to look at each of the data elements and see how they're treated, and actually did that. And the fact that it kind of came together and matches with the integrates with the purposes for processing registration data and our recommendations in some way, I guess shouldn't be surprising because, we came at those problems from the same place. Alrighty then. So can I ask Caitlin or Marika to go over the action items for today's meeting, and then have a couple comments at the end?
Kurt, did you want to go through the next agenda item first?
Let's look. Next steps, 10 minutes. If one of you guys want to take us through that, Marika, go ahead. I kind of combine next steps and wrap up into this to the same, but please go ahead, Marika.
Thanks, Kurt. This is Marika. So what you see up on the screen as well as part of the agenda is a cutout of the timeline that we shared and discussed earlier. So it may be helpful just to briefly run through this so everyone is clear on what will happen next and what the next steps are. So I think as most people are aware, today is the document deadline for the GNSO Council meeting on the 21st of February. So we'll be working with Rafiq, who is the staff, the council liaison to this group, to get a motion submitted as well as the latest version of the final report, which we expect to finalize shortly after this meeting based on some of the last items that have been discussed today. And of course, Rafiq in his note to the council will make clear that we still have a quiet period and there may be still some further updates that are made, which of course would then be clearly flagged, but this should give the council at least the opportunity to already review the latest version and prepare for their consideration of the report. So today, once we publish that latest version of the final report, that would also mark the start of the quiet period, or so-called quiet period, which is an opportunity for the team to review the final reports. That won't be in flux anymore, at least not for the time being. And the focus really should be on flagging any issues that were overlooked, are either inconsistent or an error, and review consensus designations, which have gone out separately. I do want to highlight here, this is not an opportunity or the occasion to reopen previously closed issues or questions. we've probably past that time. So again, it's an opportunity to review all the work that the group has done and flag any inconsistencies or errors that may exist. The Geneva Council has scheduled a special meeting on the 14th of February. This is an opportunity for the EPDP team leadership to present the report, explain as well where the group is currently at and what the expected next steps are, and of course for the Council to ask any questions they may have. And by the end of this week, you're expected to have flagged any issues that were overlooked, inconsistent, or an error, or any disagreements you may have with the consensus designations as put out by the EPDP team chair. So based on the list or the issues that are brought back, the leadership team will need to assess what, if any, meetings are needed next week. We already have two placeholder meetings, I think, scheduled for Tuesday and Wednesday. Again, that would allow for addressing any issues that have been identified or flagged. So based, again, on that work, some updates may be needed to the final report, especially in relation to maybe the consensus designations, as that process hasn't completed yet. And the objective is then to get that final version to the GNSO Council at the latest by the 20th of February, which would then align as well with a document deadline for another special meeting that's scheduled for the 4th of March. So the Council will have two opportunities in principle to review and consider the final report, first of all, on the 21st of February, and then second, the 4th of March. And at least from our expectation, that date will depend on the extent of the changes that are made to the final report, compared to the version that's being submitted today and the version that will be submitted on the 20th of February. So that's an assessment that the Council will need to make, whether they feel comfortable and in a position to consider the report on the 21st of February or during their special meeting on the 4th of March. So that's the immediate next steps and the timeline for getting this to the GNSO Council as well as Council consideration.
Thanks, Marika. Alan, do you have a question?
Thank you. I think Marika answered all of the questions I was going to ask, but let me restate it and make sure that I have it right. So the report will essentially be tied up today or finished today, but there will be an opportunity over the next week plus for any of the constituent parts of this EPDP to change their position on consensus or issue any other statements, which will then be reintegrated into a revised version of the report. Is that correct?
So my thinking is that we've had a chance to review our positions on consensus on a large number of the recommendations and purposes for processing registration data, and our positions affirm there. There's some remaining ones, the so-called bundle three, where we haven't gone out for a consensus call, and there's some a subset of those where we're just changing the language now. So during this 1 week period, the language on a couple or a few of the recommendations might change. And it's the quiet period is also for, essentially finding errors, contradictions, and mistakes in the report. So,
Kurt, I'll note we also had to get buy-in from the rest of our community, not just the people on this group.
Yep. Oh, that's right. So I think that the quiet period is also for preparing statements that would accompany the report that would go into the annex or some sort of document that accompanies the report.
So I think you're saying I'm basically correct.
Right. But right. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. I got to think through this stuff, too. So, Mark, please go ahead.
Hey, Kurt, hi. It's Mark Anderson. I appreciate the timeline, the update. I'm concerned that, we're working on trying to
finalized language and agreement on issues where we haven't quite closed the door on them and come to consensus. And so, I know you're looking to have this report substantially done today, but. I think we're not done on all the issues. So I guess I'm just concerned that we're, squishing things in here at the last minute and sort of echo what Alan said. We need an opportunity to review, go back to our constituencies, and get support on this. I think we all understand the tight time frames and deadlines. We're all trying to do the best we can, but I think you recognize this, but I think today can't be a hard deadline for making changes as we try and hash out these remaining issues. On a somewhat related note, I'm wondering how, as I read through the latest version of the final report, there's no indication of the level of consensus each of the recommendations have received, and so I'm wondering from sort of a practical standpoint, and I'm not necessarily looking for an answer right now, obviously, but I'm wondering how, what words you intend to use sort of for areas where the groups achieved, in your full consensus and how you plan to handle areas where, it hasn't necessarily been full consensus. So the words matter. It'll matter when the GNSO Council reviews them to make their determination. So I'm just wondering how for the recommendations that are in here, you'll be designating the consensus level. That not necessarily expecting the answer now, but I think that'll matter in our review of the report as well. So I'd like to see draft text or words of that sometime before the report itself is finalized.
So there's two points there. So first, I want to make it perfectly clear that the report's not being frozen as of today, and that in the conversations I've had with the support team, we're going to make it clear to the reader of the report that these are specific areas where language is still being discussed, and there might still be changes. So we have. We're squished, but and to a certain extent, it's a luxury because we have two working weeks to settle out the remaining wording of the issue, and we will at the close of the quiet period determine if additional meetings are necessary to close some issues out. So at the close of the, and I hope that the quiet period isn't absolutely quiet, but that as people come up with questions. As members of the team come up with questions or issues, they raise them so we can have a working quiet period to a certain extent, but that we're going to make it very clear to the GNSO Council that this is not the final report. This is, the pro forma final report, and in fact, indicate where discussion is still going on. I'm going to let Marika talk a little bit about the process going forward. I got to tell you, it's my intent to leave the wording full consensus the way I have it in the calls for consensus, and that is that and that's because in both those cases the GNSO has the same duty to approve the same level or duty to approve consensus or full consensus-based recommendations. And I did that for a couple of reasons, as I laid out in my email. First and foremost, to let those who want to opine on even full consensus positions to be able to do so. So I don't know if we need to parse that any further. In bundle three, I think there's areas where we have neither of those. So I think there's recommendations where we might have strong support but significant opposition, and there's also ones where there might be divergence, and we'll look at the latest emails and make a call on that to see if you agree with those. So we'll make it clear that on some of these, there's not full consensus or consensus that there's something else. I don't know. Marika, did you want to hear your hands raised? Did you want to add something else?
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. This is Marika. I just wanted to share how it's typically then, you know, reflected in final reports. And, you know, in most cases, there's kind of a heading that talks about, you know, unless specified differently, you know, recommendations have full consensus or consensus support of the group. And then, indeed, for those recommendations where that is not the case, a different designation is provided. And then it's up to the GNSO Council to kind of decide how to deal with that. You know, in a report where all recommendations have full consensus or consensus support, the Council will typically vote on the report as a whole. But in the case where there are recommendations that have, you know, different levels of support, you know, the Council could decide to vote on those separately or pull out those recommendations that didn't have the full consensus or consensus support and vote on those separately to determine, you know, whether sufficient support exists at the Council level to pass on these recommendations. So, again, it will depend a bit on where the report ends up. How it will look like, and as well how the Council will deal with that. I hope that's helpful.
Hi, Alan. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Can we have a bit of clarity, which I don't have, although maybe everyone else does, as to exactly when the final date is that we can send in something to be integrated into the final report. Is it before the February 14th meeting, or after, or exactly when?
I think it's that during this quiet period, so I would hope that anything would be in by the end of this week.
Okay, so we're talking about the end of this physical week, which is the 15th.
Yeah. Right. So we're going to submit a pro forma report to the GNSO Council today, and we're not going to update that in any way until we provide the actual final report. So.
Okay, but I thought we heard that there's a meeting in early March, and that's when the final report will be voted on by the GNSO. So maybe I'm the only one confused, but I thought I heard Marika said we had a bit more time than this week based on when the various documents would be going. But Marika has her hand up. Maybe she can clarify. I guess I really want a date and time to make sure that if we send something in, it doesn't – yeah, we're not told, sorry, too late.
Go ahead, Marika.
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. This is Marika. I think Kurt is correct. I think we're looking at the end of this week, because if there are statements that are included in the report, I think it's also fair for everyone to have an opportunity to review those and not have those come in and, you know, last minute. Although, of course, no one is prevented from, you know, writing to the Council separately or providing input. So I think we're really looking for anything that people think needs to be attached, annexed, or referenced in some way to the final report to get that in by the end of the week, because that will then also allow finalization of the report in the course of next week. And then just to clarify again, you know, the Council currently has 2 dates on its calendar to allow for consideration of the final report. So the first one being the 21st of February and the second one on the 4th of March. And, you know, my assumption again is that, you know, the Council during the 21st February meeting will, you know, look at the final version of the report, kind of assess, you know, what changes were made and kind of, you know, talk about, you know, do we feel comfortable to vote at this meeting? Did we have sufficient time to, you know, review those changes? Or indeed, do we need some more time? And during the 21st meeting, we can talk through, you know, what changed between the version that was submitted today and the version that was submitted on the 20th of February, so everyone's clear on that, and then, you know, have that followed by the 4th of March vote at the latest. So again, two options for a potential vote, 21st and the 4th of March at this stage, but it's for the council to consider, you know, when they feel ready, whether that's the 21st or the 4th of March.
And to add a note to that, in order to get these two extra weeks, what Marika and her team and the GNSO have agreed to is put in this potential meeting on March 4th if required. And that's what's enabled us to buy these two extra weeks. But we want to have the completed report submitted before February 21st. So we want any additional input by the 15th so we can discuss and handle that.
So for clarity, we're talking about the end of the 15th and no possible extension even to the end of the weekend. Is that correct?
That's where we are. So if you feel a need that you need to change that, come back to me.
Yep.
Terrific, everybody. Thank you so much. So you don't have to listen to me for like 5 days. Holy crap. So have a good few days here and be active on the email list. And I will be talking to you soon and at least through email. Have a great rest of your day, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Once again, the meeting has been adjourned. Operator, if you could please stop all recordings. Everyone else, please remember to disconnect all remaining lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.